Good morning, everyone. My name is Scott Newman. I am the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. Seated immediately to my left is Representative Hornstein. He is the chairman of the House Transportation Committee, and the reason that we are here today is for the first Legislative Oversight Committee of the Minlar shutdown and the implementation of the new Vitreous system. And that is a Legislative Oversight Committee that was established in the bill that was passed in the immediate past special session regarding those issues involving our licensure on automobiles and sales tax, et cetera. Before we get started, I just wanted to introduce to you the various members of this oversight committee that were established by statute. There is myself and Representative Hornstein, who are co-chairs. Today I happen to have the gavel, and Chairman Hornstein and I have agreed that we are going to alternate the gavel as we go forward with future hearings. Sitting off to my right is Senator Dibble. Senator Dibble is the minority lead on the Senate Transportation Committee. Next to him is Senator Jasinski. The bill appoints the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, or her designee, and she has designated Senator Jasinski to sit on this oversight committee. We then have Senator Lyndon Carlson is next. He is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Sitting next to him is Representative Paul Torkelson. Representative Torkelson is the minority lead in the House Transportation Committee. And then to my far left is Mr. Rick King from Thomson Reuters, and he is the chair of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Committee on Technology. Those are the folks that, by statute, are appointed to sit on this oversight committee. The oversight committee has a number of duties that are outlined in statute. And just to remind the members, it's our responsibility to review progress reports that are mandated by statute to come to us from DPS, Minute, and the vendor, which in this case is FAST. There are non-mandatory but requested reports that would come from the various stakeholders, and that would be the deputy registrars and auto owners or any other stakeholder that may have an interest in these matters. It is our responsibility to oversee the implementation of the new Vitreous system and to oversee the decommissioning of the Minlar's system, which is being replaced. We are to oversee the driver's license system, review the various charges that we implemented by statute for payment of the new system and for the decommissioning of the old system, and to hold public hearings regarding the status of the contract that was or has now been signed between DPS and FAST Enterprises. The progress reports, we are in receipt now, and I believe, members, you have progress reports from the vendor, FAST, and a joint report from DPS and Minute, which should be in your packets. It's the it's sort of the first shot at complying with that progress reports, but I do want to bring that to your attention that we do have those. The next progress report would be due prior to the beginning of the next quarter, which is January 1st, 2020. Just to remind DPS, Minute, and the vendor, we would like to have the report sometime in January to give us an opportunity to to look at it. And I would say that in terms of the next hearing, Chairman Hornstein and I have agreed that in all likelihood we would have hold the next hearing the first week of February 2020, which is just before the beginning of the next session. However, if DPS or Minute or any stakeholders or any members wish to have a meeting prior to that, if you would bring it to our attention because some problem has arisen, Chairman Hornstein and I will discuss it and schedule a hearing accordingly. That would be the extent of my preliminary remarks. Representative Hornstein, do you have anything?
No, I thank you very much, Senator Newman. Oops, thank you very much, Senator Newman. I do very much appreciate your work on this meeting. And just to remind folks, we were able to work out this legislation in a bipartisan manner at the end of session at the governor's initiative in terms of forming the Blue Ribbon Commission. And it's not easy work. And Senator Newman, I do appreciate, again, as we work together on the hands-free bill, our ability to work together, again, both sides of the aisle to get us to this point. And I'm hopeful and optimistic that this new system will help move the state forward in terms of this very important function that we have. And I'm excited to hear about the contract and where we're headed. So thank you for your work. Just also before we begin, I do see a couple of my House colleagues here, Representative Tabke and Representative Elkins, and both have been engaged and involved with this. And if either of you or both of you would like to join us here at the table, you're welcome, whatever your preference is. But I did want to acknowledge and appreciate your presence here.
And as I would welcome you as well. Thank you very much for attending and your interest in this matter. Members, it would be my intention to have come forward the representative from DPS, which I think is Assistant Commissioner O'Hearn, I'm not sure. Commissioner Tomes is in the audience, so I'm going to have them come forward. We will also have the vendor come forward at some point. I will call him forward to testify, and then we'll have Mr. Rick King give us his thoughts on the status of this matter. And after that, I would then open it up to member questions. Why don't we begin with having Commissioner Tomes and Assistant Commissioner O'Hearn, if you would come forward, and just kind of walk us through your report. And then when you're done with that, I'm not sure who is here from FAST, but whoever is from FAST, we would have you come up. Well, Mr. Buna, I guess, is in the audience. We then have Mr. Buna come up and join you, and we will go through the contract with anything that you want to point out to us. So why don't we just begin with your review of the report that you gave us, and if you would just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Tarek Tomes, and I am the Commissioner of Minute IT Services and the state's Chief Information Officer, and have prepared some remarks for the committee today. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some opening remarks. As detailed in the report that was provided last Friday, the state entered into a contract with FAST Enterprises on August 8, 2019, for implementation of a new vehicle system. Roughly 2 weeks later, on August 25th, the last release of functionality and fixes for the Minlar system, 1.16.2, was deployed successfully. This is an important milestone in a journey that began during this past legislative session, when a new and collaborative approach was taken to reassess the technology path for Minnesota's driver and vehicle services delivery system. We stand here today still at the outset of this journey, one that will be taken over the course of the next 2 years to retire Minlars and associated legacy systems and replace them with a packaged software solution. This implementation will enable Minnesota to join an ecosystem of other states who are delivering driver and vehicle services against the backdrop of a rapidly evolving technology marketplace with rapidly evolving consumer expectations. And that ecosystem will enable Minnesota to leverage both the innovative approaches of other states, as well as the research and development investments of a leading industry partner for years to come. This journey will not be easy, though. There will be, as there always is in the case of a large technology implementation, bumps in the road along the way. There will be challenges that will require the state and its external partners to balance priorities, resources, and stakeholder needs in order to implement this system on time and on budget with high quality. I am confident, though, that the collaborative approach that set us down this path last session will continue to serve us well as we enter into the implementation phase for VTRS. It has been said that collaboration that took place on the issue of Minlars laid the groundwork for compromise and a successful conclusion to the 2019 legislative session. In a similar vein, I am hopeful that the VTRS project and the work of this committee in overseeing that project can lay the groundwork for a new relationship between the legislature and executive branch information technology. I say this because in my short time as your state CIO, it is clear to me that certain critical success factors are lacking, namely trust, transparency, and effective communication. These gaps are not unique to the public sector. Rather, they are endemic in the IT industry for several reasons. First, the nature of IT work is fluid, with many dependencies and new priorities that emerge that must be balanced. This is particularly the case for large or less undefined undertakings. Second, the work is difficult to effectively communicate to non-technical audiences, which can lead to miscommunication, misunderstanding, and ultimately mistrust. Overcoming these challenges requires a redoubling and recommitment to communication and transparency, as these are the only paths back to a healthy relationship of trust. It is only when trust has been reestablished that the willingness to take risks and bold action returns. We are excited to work with Chairman King and members of the Governor's Blue Ribbon IT Council as they advise us on this and other opportunities now and in the future. And we are hopeful that their recommendations will help us continue to move state IT forward. It is critical that Minute, as your internal executive branch IT service function, move beyond the role of order taker into a co-creator role. We must leverage our enterprise perspective to guide and support agencies through the transformation journey, promoting service innovation and business process improvement as part of any technology modernization effort. We must adopt industry technology solutions wherever feasible to ensure that we are fully leveraging advancements in the marketplace, not operating 10 years behind the curve. And we must put people in the center of our technology solutions, establishing direct relationships with those frontline users who use the technology we support on a daily basis. I recently made a trip to Ely and Duluth to visit with deputy registrars and to hear from them personally, Penny Reed and Ben Martin, directly about their needs as we work to replace the Minlar system. It was really impactful to jump behind a deputy registrar station in Ely, Minnesota, with Penny Reed, obviously a much smaller size operation that, in addition to the vehicle operation that she has there, she also does dog licensing. Just to see the various screens next to each other, to hear her comments on how things are working and her aspirations going forward, she assumed that operation in 2007 was really impactful, and there's only one way to really gain that experience, and that's to actually be there personally and to see it. I committed to her, and I will absolutely follow through with this, that next vehicle that I personally register, I'm actually going to send to her. I didn't actually realize that that was an option. We must be clear with our stakeholders, as I was with one of the registrars up north, that adopting packaged software systems means eliminating some of the uniqueness in the way we do our work and being willing to change our business processes in order to achieve the greatest value from our technology. It is only through the direct engagement and transparency that we will rebuild these critical partner relationships. My hope is that over the course of this project, this committee can serve as a venue for the transparency and communication that is needed to achieve a relationship of trust. That trust will be critical as we move beyond driver and vehicle services and into other areas of state government, where significant technology modernization and service transformation is needed to prepare our state for success in the years and decades ahead. I look forward to working with Commissioner Harrington, our partners at DPS, and members of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council as we embark down this transformation journey. I look forward to working with our partners at Fast Enterprises, who have consistently demonstrated their commitment to the state of Minnesota as it relates to the Department of Revenue's GenTax system and DPS's driver's license system. And I look forward to working with all of you and in introducing you to my technology team, including Jeff Nyberg, who just joined our organization as our chief technology officer. He joins us with a most recent stay at Dairy Queen, and I'm sure he's missing his ice cream already. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some opening remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Tone. Ms. O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Cassandra O'Hearn. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, and it's my pleasure to appear in front of you today. I'm here at the request of Commissioner Harrington, who was not able to attend, but he asked that I reiterate his commitment to the success of this project and his continued engagement with it. Before I provide brief comments on the current status of the VDERS project, I want to take the opportunity to introduce the Oversight Committee to some new faces at the Department of Public Safety, as well as some of our partners. First, I want to introduce Assistant Commissioner Tim Lino. He joins the Department of Public Safety as an Assistant Commissioner of Programs. In that position, he has direct oversight over driver and vehicle services. I think he's sitting right behind me. A wave. Since his first day on April 6th, he has taken a strong part leadership role in DVS. He comes to us from Met Transit. He's former law enforcement and brings a wealth of experience in information technology systems implementation. As part of the Assistant Commissioner's review of operations at DVS, Commissioner Harrington has recently appointed Emma Corey as the new Director of Driver Vehicle Services. Today is her fourth day in this role. Emma joins us from MnDOT and has 21 years of public service experience, including 6 years at MnDOT when she served as the Operations Division Business Manager. In that role, she was responsible for providing overall management and integration of fiscal, administrative, human resources, and information resources for the Operations Division, MnDOT's largest division. We're excited that she's here, and she is ready to see the successful implementation of the vehicle system, as well as improving the customer service experience for Minnesotans. I know many of you over the years have worked with Dana Bailey in her role with MnLARS, working directly with stakeholders and legislature. And as you're aware, she's moved on from state service. And as such, our leadership team for the new system looks different. I want to take this opportunity to introduce Tony Anderson. He's the Program Director for Driver and Vehicle Systems for DVS. He brings a wealth of knowledge from his former role with the state of Colorado. He oversaw the implementation of the vehicle system there, which was also a Fast vendor, and has been instrumental in working through our contracting, planning, and partnership with Fast. We are grateful that he is here to provide his insight and experience to our new endeavor. I will ask in a few minutes for Tony to come up, if that's okay, to walk through a PowerPoint presentation about the report. Instrumental to the team are also our partners with Fast Enterprises, and I know that you'll hear from Fast, but I wanted to specifically point out Ken Buna, who is somewhere. He was the project director over the driver system, and he remains in Minnesota to oversee the implementation of the vehicle system. Knowing our staff at Public Safety, as well as the deputy registrars and other stakeholders, is instrumental in the success of this program. We also have here today some of those who are working on this project from deputy registrars. And I know Gay Smith is here and Colton, they're back there, I don't know. They are some of the stakeholders that are working every day on this system to provide their input. There will be others at the right time as well. So we're excited to continue to work with all of them. Now that you know who's who at DPS these days, I want to say how proud I am of what we've accomplished since the legislative session ended. We signed the contract under budget for FAST and are in the midst of establishing the timelines, goals, and metrics for the new vehicle system implementation. We're also hoping to get a new name for it. DPS and Minute have worked closely to implement the final release of MNLARS, as well as the new fees established in the 2019 session. MNLARS is stable and providing Minnesotans with their titles and registration documents within 30 days, although most receive titles and registration much less period of time. We look forward to the new FAST vehicle system, and I'm pleased to report that we're in that preparation phase of the project now. We're having good conversations in partnership with Minute and FAST, and have a joint understanding of how the implementation of this project will work and the decommissioning of MNLARS. We continue to have conversations with Rick King as well to ensure that he stays up to speed with our progress. We look forward to continuing to work with all of you as we move forward. And at this time, with the chair's permission, I'd like to ask Tony Anderson to come up to walk us through the presentation.
Please come forward. Welcome to the committee. It's a new face for us. Please state your name for the record, your position, and proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tony Anderson, and I'm a program director here with DVS.
And I'm going to ask you to pull that mic in nice and close and speak up.
There we go. Oh.
Yep. But don't wreck the mic.
Exactly. Oh, where it just went.
First aid jitters. All right. Tony Anderson, program director with Driver and Vehicle Services. So thank you, sir. This morning, we've got a PowerPoint presentation going over the quarterly report that was submitted this last Friday. So in the presentation, I'm going to give an update on the VTRS project. We're going to talk about the RFP that was completed, the contract that was signed, the project team, governance model, how project decisions are made, as well as customization. We're also going to talk about the FAST-DS project update. We are currently in phase two, as well as talk about the MNLARS update and decommissioning. So the RFP was published on May 28th. The development of the business requirements for the RFP was worked in consultation with members of the Deputy Registrars Association. So we had the MDRD participate, we had Dr. Boa participate, as well as the Automobile Dealers Association. The vendor response to the RFP was one vendor, and that vendor was FAST Enterprise. FAST Enterprise has over 10 jurisdictions that currently have their vehicle solution in place. During the RFP scoring process, it was completed by members of DPS, Minute, MDRA, the Deputy Registrar's Business Owner Associations, and MADA. So really taking an approach for engaging our stakeholders on the front end. So the contract was awarded on July 28th. I have June written there. I apologize for that. And signed on August 8th. June 28th was when the contract was awarded and signed on August 8th. So during the contract negotiations, our original budget was $36 million, and we came in at $33.85 million. That variance there is something where we'll leverage in contingency funds, as well as look at then potential training in greater Minnesota. We're going to have the project broken down into two phases. The first phase is the replacement of MNLARS, and that's going to include the title and registration functions, the dealer management functions, the fleet functions, document imaging, and permits. Phase two of the project is going to be the replacement of the prorate functions. The prorate functions are the motor carrier. So we've got the international registration plan as well as the international fuel tax agreement. The phase one, let's step back for a moment, that's going to be deployed Monday, November 16th, 2020, and phase two for the motor replacement of the prorate functions October 2021. We are currently in the process of completing the definition phase and will be, preparation phase, and at the conclusion of that, we will have a project plan submitted. For everyone's view, this is a organizational chart of the project. So as a whole, we're going to have leadership from DPS, Minute, and FAST Enterprise. We're going to have participation. We're going to have individuals involved for change management and communications. Change management is going to be a real key for function for this project. The project itself is going to be going very quickly, and change management is kind of the bringing the people along, making sure individuals know why are we changing, reinforcing the reason for the changing, making sure they have the training and awareness. We are breaking the team down into multiple groups. We're going to have a title and registration team, and that's going to be composed of members from DVS, deputy registrars, Minute, as well as FAST staff members. We're going to have a financials team, and that is going to be made up of members from DVS, the deputy registrars, and FAST. We're going to have a dealers and inventory team made up from DVS, deputy registrars, and be engaging our partners with Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. We're going to have an interface team comprised of members from DVS and Minute, a conversion team, and the conversion team is going to be looking at taking those records from MinLars and putting it into FAST, from DVS, a deputy registrar position coming on board here in January, February timeframe, as well as Minute staff. We're going to have training, someone dedicated for the full duration of the project, as well as bringing on approximately 20 individuals as we get closer towards the May, June, July timeframe, where we'll be bringing 20 individuals on board. We'll be separating that between representatives from DVS as well as the deputy registrars. Training, we talked about training, and testing. We have one staff member dedicated for a minute, and the same as training. Towards the kind of that April, May, June timeframe, we'll be having a staggered onboarding of staff from DVS as well as requesting from the deputy registrars to participate in that. And then we have a technical and support group that's going to be working at making sure the securities and everything like that work appropriately. For everyone's awareness, here's kind of our governance structure. So we've got the project team, so the subject matter experts, so the individuals that that I just talked about there that are on either like the title and registration team, the dealers group, our inventory. We're going to have a vehicle leadership team that's going to meet every week, once a week, to talk about the decisions. We have a senior executive leadership meeting, so that's senior leaders with DVS and Minute. And then we have our executive steering committee, so that is members of Minute, DPS, Deputy Registrars, associations, as well as auto dealers associations. And then ultimately we have Commissioner Harrington for the oversight. So project decisions, kind of a busy slide here, but where you see the five boxes at SMEs, that's really kind of showcasing the majority of the decisions are going to be made at that SME level. With Mind a COTS solution, so a commercial off-the-shelf solution, a lot of the work is already done for us. So we're going to be making those functions to kind of tailor to Minnesota. For anything that needs to be escalated, we're going to leverage those groups that we just talked about in regards to the vehicle leadership team, the senior leadership team, ESC, as well as ultimately our commissioner. So for customization, here is kind of our framework on how customization will be. As you can see, there's kind of a closed loop. So as things are escalated from the subject matter experts, we will have a kind of closed loop going back and down, back and forth in regards to why. You know, why are we having customization? The probability of this slide being leveraged or this functionality is slim, but we want to make sure we have a process in place. So if something does come up, we're able to fall back on a process. Status update for FastDS. So with phase two, the remaining deliverable is state to state. State to state is scheduled to go live here September 28th. And some of the highlights of the work completed are as followed. So we enabled the acceptance of online fee payments for reinstatement as well as application fees. We've completed interfaces with the exam auto test machines as well as added exam scheduling enhancements to allow for more automated eligibility checks, kind of a first find functionality so a user was able to identify the first appointment available, as well as a nightly sweep to cancel any appointments for individuals that have passed their driver's test. MinLars update and decommissioning. As Commissioner Tomes talked about, we've already completed the release of 16, 16.1, and 16.2. We've just recently completed the process for decommissioning our first mainframe, and that was the Supra database, and that was completed on June 30th. And we will continue to be doing decommissioning as the project goes on board. So as we bring more and more functionality with the FAST phase one, we'll be decommissioning shortly after the rollout of those functionality. And that is a high-level overview of the presentation that that you folks have received. Are there any questions for me?
Thank you very much. At this point, if we could have the representative from FAST come forward. I've got either Mr. Harrison or Mr. Boone. I'm not sure who's in the audience.
Kind of a question, I guess.
morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
One of the things that we would like you to do, if you would, you know, either one of you, you get to pick. But just talk to us about the contract that was entered into, and I think signed on August 8th. If you would talk to us about the contract from your perspective, Mr. Harrington, or Mr. Buna, whoever wants to go first.
Sure,
Mr. Harrington, state your name for the record. Your position with FAST, and then give us your update, please.
Sure. I'm James Harrison. I'm one of the owners of FAST Enterprises. Good morning, Chairman Newman, Chairman Hornstein, and members of the committee. I will maybe start with a brief answer to your question, and then welcome if people want to get into more detail. We have had a long-standing contract with the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and about 2 years ago, maybe, at that time, we were approached by Minute about the possibility of doing a driver license system for the state of Minnesota. And so we did enter into a contract for that, and I apologize, I don't remember the exact month and year, but it was maybe a year and a half to 2 years ago. That contract was negotiated over the course of several months, and we did, adopt some of the principles and frameworks from the earlier Department of Revenue contract in order to get that done. That was for us, an ambitious project. We did say at the time that we were going to take particular care to look at that contract to make sure it provided a good framework to deliver successfully for the state. So, and that project did go fairly well. So when this opportunity came up to also do the vehicle system, we did propose in our proposal, and I think that proposal was mostly accepted by the state, that we would actually use the driver contract as the framework for the vehicle contract. And so that contract, I would say, was able to be figured out fairly quickly, as state contracts go for large projects like this, because we were using the driver contract as a model. And again, that did sort of use the earlier revenue contract as a model. Happy to answer any additional questions about the contract. We are underway, and so far it seems to be working well for us.
Thank you for your for your testimony, Mr. Bruna. Anything that you want to add at this point, or are you just here to answer questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm Ken Buna with FAST Enterprises. I'm an associate partner, and I'm the staff on the ground full time here in St. Paul. Contractual stuff falls to the gentleman on my right, but anything in terms of the project, the questions of the startup, the relationships, the vibe for how the project is going so far would strictly fall on me. So it kind of depends on the question, would depend on who would provide the answer.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm going to have to abide by my own rules, but I would ask that you, remain in the room, because I do have a couple of questions for you, but I set the rules of member questions following all testimony. I suppose I better live with that. So if you wouldn't mind hanging around, I do have a couple of questions. Before I go to Mr. King, I see Mr. Bussey in the room. Would you come forward? I do have a question for you, please. Yeah, just go ahead. Mr. Bussey, if you would state your name for the record and who you work for.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. Didn't know I was testifying, but my name is Chris Bussey. I am the Deputy Legislative Auditor for the Minnesota Legislative Auditor's Office.
Mr. Bussey, the bill in question requires the Legislative Auditor to appoint an Information Technology Auditor to, in effect, oversee the decommissioning of Minlars and the commissioning of Vitreous. Can you enlighten us as to whether or not that information technology auditor has in fact been appointed by Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chair, committee members, yes, the information technology auditor has been appointed. The individual that will be leading the work for our office will be Mark Matheson. He is our Director of Information Technology Audit. We also have another member of our team who specializes in application level security, who will be joining that team as well, and that is Joe Sass. They're both here in the room today. And I certainly will be participating in the project as well directly. As you know, we are the eyes and ears of the legislature. We work for you. And our goal is to do whatever we can to help you make decisions throughout the life of the project, whether it's with the detailed technology work that we do or any other work that the legislature is looking for. As you know, we've done work looking at the detailed transactions and helping make recommendations on proposed changes to business rules with the new system. We provided you with a detailed history of how the project got to where it got through our program evaluation division, and a series of other reports on the technology itself and the state of the funding. So whatever we can do to help the project beyond just the requirements in law with the project monitoring, we'll certainly be looking forward to help any way we can.
And Mr. Brucey, are you in receipt of the report from the vendor and DPS in minute?
No, we are not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and that is one of the requirements, of course, of the statute, and I would request that the vendor, DPS in minute, make sure that the legislative auditor receive a copy of the subject report that just came out and any future reports. If Mr. Bussey, if you would kindly hang around to see if, in case members have any questions for you from the legislative auditor, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being here this morning, and welcome to the Legislative Oversight Committee. We are very happy that you are serving with us. If, for the record, you would state your name, please, and your position, and proceed to tell us where we are at with respect to Minlars and Vitreous.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick King. I'm the Executive Vice President at Thomson Reuters. I chair the Blue Ribbon Council on IT, and I'm a non-voting member of this committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and hello to all the members. The last time I spoke to you was May 14th, and I spoke to you about the independent expert review team's report and the recommendations on Minlars that was released on May the 1st. I want to thank the members of that independent expert review, Teresa Wise, Mick Atten, and Amy Albus, for their service. Teresa and Amy are continuing their service with the Blue Ribbon Council on IT, so that's a good continuity. But now to today, I pick up from May 14th, and we've heard a lot of the details already. As you know, the bill was signed into law on May 30th. And it called out several points, and I thought it might be useful for me to just go through the points and then tell you where I think we are. Obviously, I'm here on the committee, so that was one of the points. Probably one of the most challenging parts was accelerating the purchase timeline, and I'd have to say this was accomplished. The RFP, as was talked by here by by Tony just a minute ago, getting published in late May. There were information requests, and ultimately one vendor responded. The limiter seemed to be the requirement that we put in the RFP about doing vehicle system work in at least five states. And I frankly think that's a pretty reasonable criteria on our part and probably gave us a very experienced vendor. The bid was awarded to FAST on the 28th, as was said, signed on the 8th, and work began. I have to say that DPS and the contracting arm of Minute kept me updated along the way. I reviewed documents several times at their request and sometimes at my request, but they shared completely and were interested in the kind of feedback that we had as a review team. I think on the other part of the law, talking about what we needed to do with Minlars, you heard also in that description that there were three releases of Minlars. One release, primarily the remaining enhancements for the June release, and the subsequent releases were the things that were prescribed in law. There were fee changes, there were duplicate sticker fees, there were plate fees, there were filing fees, and our technology fee that we introduced. So between the other two releases, all of those got implemented, and I think in good form, there were no issues reported with any of the releases by any of the users. They were tested well, and they were each done a little bit earlier than they were prescribed, which I think allowed DPS to get maybe one more month of fees initiated than maybe they had planned for originally, but they certainly hoped for that. So that was good. I will note that there were larger than normal groups on a call called a go-no-go call, including at times the governor, who was listening to the criteria that the group was assessing as to whether the product was ready for release. So to say that there was some heightened interest in making sure the releases were quality would be an understatement. I do think the teams responded very well with that. In the law, the project delivery fell into two phases. Phase one was to be at the end of the year 2020, phase two in the fall of 2021. As you just heard, rollout number one is going to be November 16th, 2020, so that's before the end of 2020. That's a check mark there. And rollout number two will be on or before October 1st, 2021, and that is certainly the fall of 21. So I think the schedule that's been outlined for both the FAST rollout and the legacy decommissioning fits what we prescribed in the law. As Deputy Commissioner Ahern alluded to, I think the contract came in slightly lower than the cost estimates that the independent expert review panel suggested, so that's good. I think, you know, it's good to have some contingency there, so I think they've got a little bit there to help in case we smooth over the bumps in the road that Commissioner Tomes talked about. But essentially, at that point, this came in as expected, with a schedule as expected, and then the Minlars pieces went in. I have to compliment the leadership of Minute and DPS. They kind of reimagined the way they relate the ownership of the project. And it was a bit of a new day as we went forward. I think everybody was interested in getting off really sharply and well in a new and different way. After about 2 weeks with FAST signed and on the project, I spoke with Mr. Buna just to check in with him and make sure that he was getting what he needed, wasn't getting what he didn't need, and to make sure that he was satisfied. I think the main issue with most of these projects is when the project team needs help from a subject matter expert, which you may have seen that SME term on Mr. Alexander's chart. If you could see that chart, it was a little bit small. They need to provide those answers quickly, and they've committed to doing that effectively, and I think at this point, FAST has told me that they're happy with that, and they seem to be establishing a decent relationship as well with Minute. And it's more of a change, I think, for Minute in terms of not owning and running the technology, but rather monitoring a vendor who is actually implementing the technology the way they've done in some other states. So that is a bit of a change. On September 16th, FAST will complete the their detailed project plan, which will allow for resource planning, and we'll continue to review that. I was very pleased to see the introduction of two of our deputy registrars here, and I understand that we'll have up to five of them involved in the project full-time at certain points. So it's good to see, and we hope we can short-circuit some of the disconnects with the deputy registrars that have happened in the past. So for us, I think for the Blue Ribbon Council, we need to keep an eye on the resources that the state provides to help FAST based on FAST request, make sure they're right-sized. So that's the FAST part, and then make sure that MNIT has the right resources on MNLARS for the decommissioning, and we can go forward with that. So in summary, I'll make 4 points. First, DPS, MNIT, and admin, I'll add them in here because we haven't talked about them, did a great job to move the procurement fast as we requested, an accelerated procurement cycle. In addition, all of these entities have been open and proactive about involving me when they think that something's required, but I also have not been shy about involving them when I have questions. I think Vitris, or whatever the future name is on track so far, but obviously it's early, and we need to support FAST in every way that they need and properly monitor the project going forward. That's the end of my testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. King. And if you'd remain there for just a moment, I'm going to open it up to member questions. And, you know, I don't know if there are any questions for you at this point or not. But before we ask the question, if Mr. Buna and Mr. Harrison would return to the testifying table, I will have a question for them. Members, any questions for Mr. King while he is at the testifying table? Senator Yasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. King. Again, looking back from the beginning, we always were concerned the number of deputy registrars were not enough that were involved in the previous release. And so is five, in your opinion, is five enough that represent a small shop, a large shop, a county-run shop, a city-run shop, and a private shop that gives everybody not exactly what they want, but a good compromise that represents all our different structures of deputy registrars?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I do believe that five is sufficient. It's hard to judge between, say, five and eight, but I think any more than that is not really necessary. Five is a good number, and the five would be there full time, so they're actually there every day. I think that will get a lot of utility out of that. I think it is also incumbent on those groups to work back with their associations and make sure they keep the members that they represent, the five representing the full suite of deputy registrars, informed about what's going on and get their input.
Senator Jasinski.
And just to follow up on that, and not that everyone was not hurt, but in my opinion, what I see are privates that were hurt the most. And I really want to make sure we have enough privates, from small privates to large privates, that are represented to make sure that we don't have issues that we did previously. I understand the county run and the city run, they have much more of a structure and a more financial backing. If something would go wrong, they can actually pass that on to the taxpayers. Not that we want to see that happen, but the privates that are really my concern. So I really hope that we can focus a lot of attention on our privately run deputy registers so that they do not come into the issue they did in the previous MNLARS system and that. So I really want to keep key on that. I'll keep asking these questions every meeting to make sure these private deputy registers are fully represented and supported in our new system that we come out with. So thank you.
Any comment, Mr. King?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I make one comment and say that you might request the deputy commissioner of DPS or the project leader to comment on Senator Jasinski's question, because I gave you my opinion, but they're the ones that have outlined that number of people and so forth.
Be happy to do so. Any other questions for Mr. King? Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, in the FAST report, and maybe if you want to defer my question to the author there, but under the preparation phase, it says the SMEs were looking to identify areas where Minnesota requirements differed from the initial procurement demonstration. And it doesn't really tell us much about what that sentence in the long term really meant. So if you can enlighten us there, and then you may want to defer this one, but it's somewhat related to Mr. Holmes, because he referenced, I think it was Mr. Holmes, that you would be looking at initiatives or innovative ideas from other states, and just how that would be approached, and would you see that some of those changes from other states and or how Minnesota differs would require any statutory changes as you move forward or policy changes internally.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I will make some statements about that, but I think the hearing from FAST a little bit about that and from DPS about that would be important as well. I think we made a large set of comments in the independent expert review about the idea of customization. I think, you know, there was a reference to the approval mechanism for the customization that Mr. Alexander referenced when he spoke, and I very much support making it difficult to seek changes that would require customization. I think the idea here is that you minimize those to the greatest extent possible, use the software as it's been written, and then hold out rigorously for only those things that are very, very important and can't be changed in the process flow for the state of Minnesota. And I think the first note that you asked the question about refers to that, trying to understand what that piece is. And I think everybody's dedicated, and I certainly am going to keep my keen eye on it, to keeping that as small as possible, thus that group of people that actually have to approve it up and including the commissioner of DPS. So that would be my piece on that. I would probably defer on your second question. I think maybe those might be best sorted by either FAST or DPS.
Mr. Chairman, if that would be appropriate, I would like to hear from them as well.
Yeah, that would be fine, Representative Carlson. We're going to get rid of Mr. King, and then we'll call up whoever it is that you wish to question. Any other questions for Mr. King? Seeing none, Mr. King, if you'd return to the committee table. And Mr. King, as we move forward, as a member of this committee, you feel free to answer or ask any questions that you may have. Mr. Harrison or Mr. Buna, you know, whoever wishes to answer my question is this. Clearly in statute, Department of Public Safety is the lead agency for the implementation of VITRIS. And as I understand it, Minnett's primary role is the decommissioning of the old Minlar system. So my question to you is, as the vendor, are you receiving, you know, all of the information that you need in order to proceed with the contract? Are you receiving too little, too much in the way of requests or input? Just give us a little bit of feedback on to in terms of the role of, as you see it, with DPS and Minnett as we move forward with the implementation and the decommissioning. Mr. Harrison. Mr. Bruna.
Mr. Chair, yes, we've received a lot of good information both from both Minnett and DPS. Minnett's primary role on top of the decommissioning is also providing us with the infrastructure, hardware, networking, that type of operational work. They were great to work with during our first FastDS rollout, and we're continuing to see that great cooperation with Minute in terms of the hardware and infrastructure. In terms of the decommissioning and other related information we need from them, we've been at this for about 2 weeks. So we're just starting to ask the questions and knock on the doors, and we're just to the point now where we're starting to get to some pointed questions, and to date, the answers have been forthcoming and very quick.
Anything to add, Mr. Harrison?
As far as what we, you know, to date, and it is early, what we would look for from DPS, DPS has been very helpful, Mr. Chairman, and I would point back to Senator Jasinski's comments earlier. We do very much look for and even rely upon good business expertise from ultimately the people who will use the system, and DPS has been very helpful in bringing deputy registrars onto the project that are engaged and excited to be there and very much motivated. They seem very motivated to help us create a good solution for the state, and so for all the different stakeholders and users. So been pleased so far, and there haven't been things we've been needing that we have not been getting, but it is early. But I will say, we're not shy about asking for things. So, but DPS seems very committed to making sure this goes well. So they've been, let's just say, almost falling over themselves trying to help.
Thank you, gentlemen. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question might be for the representatives from FAST. It's the first question of a part of another question I want to ask of DPS. I assume we're going to have them forward in a little bit. Okay, great. So I'm looking at the contract, clause 2.3 on key personnel, which says that key personnel shall remain on the project until final acceptance and shall not be reassigned. And those key personnel are to be identified by the parties in writing, and no reassignment unless written permission is given by the state of Minnesota. I'm glad to see this provision in the contract. I think it addresses a problem we had with the previous vendor. As I understand, as I did my research into that era, that was a common practice of that vendor in other states across the country. The A-team was pitched as the folks who were going to be on site to do the work, and then they were swapped out, and other random people were assigned to do the work. So my question is, my basic question is, have those key personnel been identified in writing? It refers to an attachment C, but I think that refers to something else, but it's not a part of attachment C. So has that been completed? And I just wanted to gain some sort of public affirmation that that is an aspect of the contract that we are paying attention to and we will adhere to.
Senator Dibble, sorry.
One moment. As we move forward, there's a number of questions that are lining up for Department of Public Safety, so perhaps we could have Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn come to the testifying table, because I know Senator Jasinski's got a follow-up, Representative Carlson has got a follow-up, and I think Senator Dibble's question involves Department of Public Safety, but I'll go to Mr. Buna at this point.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. Senator Dibble. Yes, the named resources that were put in the contract are all on site today. So there's, I believe, six or seven of them. They are all on site full time now, and three of them have relocated back to St. Paul.
So, Senator Dibble.
And so that means that they've been mutually identified by parties in writing, and so that's all squared away.
It's in that contract. It's in that Mr. Appendix
Bonner.
C.
Yep.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you.
That's it. Senator Jasinski, did you have a follow-up question for DPS?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I think believe for Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, again, privates, the private companies versus the public, city run versus county run, just making sure how we're attacking both those, and maybe to FAST represent as well as this done in other states. I know Minnesota's a little unique in how we do ours, but is there a way that we can really focus to make sure these private companies deserve the or get the attention they deserve as far as the transformation of this system to make sure they're represented well and that we don't have any issues like we did previously? I just like, and the number, so there's five, I believe, of the deputy registers on this portion. How many of those are the private businesses and how many are the public?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually, if it would be appropriate, think this would be great for Gay Smith to answer the question as a representative of the Private Deputy Registrars Association and to hear directly from them. Our understanding is other states have included other stakeholders as well, and the number of individuals that are currently on the project, it was a recommendation that in conversations with Tony Anderson, who had that experience in Colorado, where they also utilized entities and stakeholders on their project, as well as working with FAST.
Senator Yuzinski.
And then maybe that's a follow-up then for Mr. Anderson, is how that's handled. Obviously, he's done that in other states, so how that'll be handled here in Minnesota.
Mr. Anderson.
Good morning, sir. Thank you. The request for individuals to be part of the project. I worked directly with Gay Smith, so the president of the Deputy Registrar's Business Association, as well as then with Ning Lohr from the MDRA. So at the project heart, so far we're at four individuals. We'll be having four individuals joining. So far we have three. One of those represents the business owners groups, and two represent MDRA. A second individual from the business owners will be coming on board in January timeframe, as well as an individual from the Auto Dealers Association. When we begin the process of looking at the training and testing, we're going to be bringing on, in total, approximately 40 additional people. So we'll be looking at what's that kind of level load in regards to having Deputy Registrar participation as well as DVS. Is it like a 50-50 split? So do we solicit seeing, come here? But kind of the bottom line answer to your question is solicited both the president of both associations and said, who could participate on the project?
And then
Senator
just
Zelensky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final, my recommendation, or what I'd like to see, is to make sure that we have both the large volume private deputy registers and the smaller volume, because I know their businesses are not always run the same. They have day in, day out operations that are very different in a small shop operation, mm-hmm. or a large volume shop. So I would just encourage us to get as much input from the privately held deputy registers as possible to make sure that we don't run into any issues like we did before. And that would be my final comment. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson, did you have a follow-up question?
Yes, yeah, there we go. I'm always trying to get used to the Senate system here with the mics. But as a follow-up and maybe just a little background to the reason I'm raising the question, you went over the timeline at the beginning of the meeting that we would meet again just prior to the legislative session. And when I looked at the FAST report and the comments about looking at what other states are doing that might provide us with some innovative ideas, what the process would be if there is any need for policy changes and I referenced before, statutory changes, and just how that process would unfold. And I know in your announcements, Mr. Chairman, you indicated that if necessary, we could meet earlier. But at least as we sit here now, the plan is that just prior to the legislative session, which will be a very short one. And so I'm just interested in what that process would be, because Mr. King, you commented about trying to keep it as streamlined, those are my words, but as possible with the software and so on that's already available. So if whoever would appropriately answer that question, I did reference Mr. Holmes earlier because he talked about other states.
Representative Carlson, you know, you pose a legitimate question as to whether or not any statutory changes may be necessary, both Representative Hornstein and myself were attempting to not have, let's call it, an unnecessary hearing earlier than the first week of February. But most certainly, if as we proceed, any member or DPS minute or the vendor have information they want to convey to us that another hearing is going to be needed in order to address your concerns, Representative Carlson, we most certainly will do that. Mr. King, you had a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I apologize. I think I misunderstood part of what you were saying. One venue for those legislative changes could be the Blue Ribbon Council. We're planning on doing a quarterly report, as we're prescribed to do, by the end of December to accommodate legislative changes on any of the technology things that are identified there. So I would suggest, because we know so much about what's going on with this, that if any of the entities are interested in that, we would discuss them at the Blue Ribbon Council. We would put that in the December report if we felt that some kind of statute change would facilitate work here. We've been asked by the chairs of this committee to do that very thing over time as well.
Any follow-up, Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I think that answers basically my question then, because my question was process, and that covers it. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This relates to the contract. On page 7, there is a section at the top, part 7, related to dispute resolution. And it states that the parties must promptly notify each other of any known dispute and work in good faith to resolve such dispute within a reasonable time. And if necessary, state and contractor will jointly develop a short briefing document that describes the issue or issues of relevant impact and positions of both parties. Would such a document be made public or available to our committee? It seems like a dispute resolution between the contractor and the state would be important for our oversight functions. So I'm wondering how that works.
Mr. Hurst.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to start answering that question by just asking a question. That is a clause we had in our driver contract. And so how many times did we have a dispute for that? So, it would be sort of some new territory if we were to have a dispute. So I'm going to speak to how I would anticipate these things usually do start with discussions, but at some point they do lead to documents. And on a question like that, we would defer to DPS, but I would guess that DPS would be all too happy to share that at the appropriate time. But it would be our practice to defer to DPS as to with whom it should be shared and when.
Thank you.
Senator Yuzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is for FAST or DPS, but one of the things I'm concerned about is we really want to make sure we have a solid scope of what we're doing here and not get a scope creep and end up continuing on and continuing on. So between FAST and DPS, do we have a definite scope of where our endpoint is to make sure that we reach that at a point? Not saying that we can change the direction along the go if we find something, but it seems like what I saw in Minlars was we just kept changing and changing and changing. We never had a finish line to say, okay, here's where we're at. This is the final time. I just want to make sure between DPS, FAST, and Mr. King that we know where our scope is and when our ending point is and what is all included in that. So I don't know who wants to comment on that, but I think that's something up front that we all want. We all want to make sure we're there when we get to that end point. We know the finish line, and that finish line just doesn't keep changing and changing and changing. So whoever wants to comment on that, thank you.
Mr. Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Jasinski. In the contract, it fairly clearly states that we will support all business processes that were done in Minlars and any business process that was done in the legacy system prior to Minlars, understanding that not everything in Minlars, like the dealer stuff, the permitting functions, and other functions to support vehicle titling, not all of them were in Minlars, but if they were done before, they will be included in scope. In addition, things come up that are basically really good ideas. And what happens at that point is myself often in discussions with Mr. Harrison, but Mr. Anderson and I would discuss those. We would look at how big they were and how much impact that would have on the project. If it's something that's very large, it would goes on what we call a pull list, which is something to consider later. If it's small and between Mr. Anderson and I, we determine we can do it and not change the schedule and not change the budget, we would include it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then only I think I would like a comment from Mr. King on that issue as well, on how he perceives the, how that will run.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I think that's outlined a good process for it, and I think that we have to be rigorous in terms of maintaining the budget, maintaining the timelines, and then raise the issue if there's something vitally important and understand what the impact is. So I support the prescribed process.
Representative Horn, Torkelson, getting confused. Representative Torkelson.
I have slightly more hair, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question, I'm not sure who might be able to answer this, but one of our duties is truly to kind of make sure that the existing system, Minlars, that's going to be decommissioned, keeps on sailing until its decommissioning date. And I don't know if we're expecting more information on that in a report form or if there's someone here today who would like to address how we're doing on keeping the old battleship afloat.
Representative Torkelson, I would tell you that I would expect that the decommissioning of Minlars will occur in a regular and orderly fashion. And because this is the very beginning of the process, I would think that in the next report that we receive, we'll have some detail as to the status of or the current status of Minlars. Mr. Anderson, any comment or anyone from DPS that wishes to respond to Representative Torkelson's question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would have to defer to my business partners with Minute.
Commissioner Tomes.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, a really astute question related to the continued running of the battleship, or I think language similar to that. The current Minlar system is, depending on, estimates, probably two-thirds, three-fifths, four-fifths complete, and is able to really largely manage the transaction volume that it's requested to do. But there are a lot of manual interventions and manual steps, and so there is a staff that provides the just ongoing maintenance of the system related to security patches, maintaining the infrastructure, as well as just the normal starting and stopping and correcting of runtime activities that are involved. And I think it's really critical that, we don't take our eye off of that until the appropriate time for decommissioning.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A follow-up to that, do we have the financial resources in place to address any needs to keep the battleship afloat, or is it possible that we'll be looking at contingency funds to do more work when necessary?
At the moment, I think the prerequisite funding within the larger project exists to maintain Minlars for the duration of this project.
Senator Zinsky, did you have a question to this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up, you know, I think it's due to say thank you for what's happening since we got out of our session. I've talked to my auto dealers, my deputy registers. Things have really improved. The turnaround time, things run smooth. So I want to thank you. At this time, I think it's the appropriate time just to say thank you to yourself and DPS and everybody involved. It just seems to be running much more fluidly. We don't get as many complaints. So I just want to say thank you for everything you've done since we brought this up at the end of session.
Mr. King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I apologize to Mr. Anderson, who I know, but I misspoke and said Mr. Alexander. Apologies, Tony. Could we request a copy of the PowerPoint that he showed? It might be useful for all of the committee members to have that.
Mr. King, that is on my list to request before we adjourn, but now that you brought it up, if we could have your PowerPoint, Mr. Anderson, that you presented. It was not in our packets, and I would like to have that shared with the membership, if you please, sometime within a reasonable time after today's adjournment.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll make sure that happens.
Senator Dibble. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. King, I apparently cut you off. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, sorry. I just had probably a list of two or three other items, if it's okay.
Yep.
I'm curious about the creation of the Driver and Vehicle Executive Steering Committee that I think was supposed to be created by statute, which is on your chart, Mr. Anderson, below the commissioner. Do you want to speak to that, or does Deputy Commissioner Hearn want to speak to that? When will that be constituted, and when will that first meeting take place?
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Driver and Vehicle Executive Steering Committee, just recently in March of 2018, we created some bylaws and some charter for the group and assigned members to that. So we've continually been meeting throughout here, and I can gladly give you the engagement for the individuals that are voting members and the draft agendas and stuff like that we do cover if you'd like.
Great.
Mr. King.
Thank you. I think I made my comments about the customization earlier, so I'll stop on that one. I think the question about reporting on Minlars was a good question, keeping the battleship going, I guess. I would envision in the future that we would hear a lot about FAST individually about how that was going, but very clearly, again, individually about how the Minlars decommissioning is going. And I think Mr. Alexander or Mr. Anderson had a piece on that in his PowerPoint. There was one item that has been decommissioned out of that already, but it would be helpful for those two reports to be distinct, I think, for the committee in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. King. And Commissioner Tomes, if you could, you know, in the next report, you know, specifically, I noticed that this was a joint report, and that's fine. As long as if DPS and Minute want to have a joint report, that it's okay with me, but have a separate part in there, principally, I think, by Minute on the status of the decommissioning of the Minlars system. Mr. King, anything further? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my questions would be to Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn and or Commissioner Tomes. I might have a question for Mr. Anderson as well. And it goes back to the contract. And I really don't mean to relitigate and dwell in the past, but I think we're all a little PTSD. And so maybe I am. But what I want to call attention to is I already called attention to the issue of key personnel from the contractor staying on project unless mutually agreed to departing, which I feel like is a lesson learned from past experience and is a best practice. Another one I see, and I just want to ask specifically and then ask more generally of Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn if there's anything else that we should be aware of where this relationship with this current vendor is going to be better because of the terms that are set forth in this contract. What I'm looking at is intellectual property rights, which is Clause 13. It's a lot of words to read, so I can't really, there's four sub-clauses, so I can't really make out what that provides for, but I do recall that was an issue when the previous private vendor was terminated. There was a struggle, and it became one of the points of contention in terms of the negotiation for the ending of the relationship, what exactly belonged to the state of Minnesota, and what belonged to that vendor, and how that, what was actually clearly Minnesota's property, was going to be given back, and under what terms. They ended up getting money for things, you know, more money than they should have for things that they didn't deserve to get money for. So I'm wondering if Clause 13 is an improvement upon that past relationship, and is one of those learnings, and if there's anything else in here that might reflect that. I'm also looking at state audits and requirements, but I don't think that's really speaks to program audit to make sure that we're on track and on goal. I think that was one of the things that helped us figure out that things weren't going well with the previous vendor was an audit that was conducted, I think, by an external vendor. Do we have something like that in place, or do we think all of this that we're doing here supplants that? I don't think we should be relying on the legislative auditor. That's not the legislative auditor's role to make sure that what's going on internal to the agency with the program and project is on task and on track. So it's kind of two questions. You know, what are we doing about, you know, making sure that the program is on task and on track? Is the intellectual property rights piece an improvement on past practice? And what else in this contract reflects some of the learnings from the past that improves on how things were with the previous vendor?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, three questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, that was a lot of questions.
It was really three questions.
Kind of
intellectual property,
yep.
Auditing,
yep.
And then what else do we know that we're doing better than we did before?
Right. And I would take the last one first, which I would first set, rather than pointing to something in the contract, it's actually the relationship that we already have with FAST. We utilized, as you've heard, most of the same terms that were in the driver contract that took months to develop and work with the experts at the Department of Administration, as well as Minute and DPS and MMB were all at the table on doing that. And so that process and the experience that we had with FAST on drivers gave us a lot of comfort that we are in a very different place today with this vendor than we have been with any other previous vendor, as we have prior relationship. In addition, they have been a vendor with Gentax, with the Department of Revenue. Some of the same terms are also in that contract that I believe is an over 10-year relationship as well. So the existing relationship with the state of Minnesota and FAST Enterprises has been very good. And our most recent experience with drivers, I think, is where the most comfort comes from as far as lessons learned. And as you pointed out, there are things that are in this contract specifically to address whether it was what happened with the Department of Public Safety and our previous contracts or the Department of Administration with respect to other contracts. And for that, you will see, as you aptly pointed out, the requirement of key personnel and making sure that they needed to remain on the project and be here. As far as the intellectual property
That is a situation that is, I think, has been a lesson learned about what to do. We are currently in have to develop the ongoing maintenance contracts with FAST if we are going to ongoing maintenance with that. But the system is here to stay with that aspect. I think part of the milestones, setting up the milestones with respect to specific payments for those milestones, as well as the retainage situation to ensure that there is both a financial reason, benefit to getting it done, but also if the project is not, if one of the milestones is not completed and ultimately the rollout it does not go as planned, there is a financial holdback of funds for that. Did I get all three?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you. And then just, I understand we have this committee, we have, the legislative auditor,
yes,
who's kind of keeping track, making sure everyone's on task and on track. Previously, it was some sort of an internal audit mechanism that no one knew about until it came to light that the vendor was being terminated and that audit was cited, or the data in that audit was cited as the reason. Is that happening, or is that necessary, or does this all replace all of that?
Yeah.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, Senator Dibble, that I forgot that one. So there, in addition to the OLA audit, where they will continue to audit this project, there is also the IVNV, Independent Validation and Verification, audits that will be happening with this project as well.
Representative Torkelson. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were...
Commissioner Tomes had a follow-up.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I saw Commissioner Tomes hold up his hand.
I completely missed you. Commissioner Tomes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I wasn't actually sure if I was allowed to raise my hand from this side. I just was going to chime in just a little bit, add a little bit more context to the intellectual property question. One of the fundamental core differences in what we're engaging on with FAST as a partner versus what happened previously is a contractual engagement for a custom development, which includes the intellectual property rights for that code that was developed, and in the event that you part ways with a vendor, that you assume responsibility and ownership of that code and then continue to develop it, versus purchasing a solution that exists in the marketplace, where a lot of the intellectual property surrounding that type of a solution is really the interfaces, how we connect it with other state systems that need to exchange information with it, the business processes that we implement within that system. So a little bit of a just nuanced distinction between a buy versus build and the contractual nuance that is associated with buy versus build.
That it, Senator Dibble? Okay. Senator Dibble.
If you can come back to me, I have a different question for Mr. Anderson, but I'll suspend for now.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Really a request for the next meeting that we get updates on how things are going with the federal government and how this new program is going to relate to other states as we look at the broader perspective of vehicle registration and programming.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, any thoughts or comments regarding Representative Torkelson's request?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this committee wants us to attempt to figure out what the federal government is doing related to these, in all seriousness, to the extent that there are changes that would be required to either the drivers or the vehicle system in order to be compliant with federal mandates, we would certainly bring that forward. Is that what you are asking, Representative Torkelson?
Representative Torkelson, yes. Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thank you. So I still get to, I'm still a little confused about if the driver's license side and the vehicle side systems, now both under development from FAST, connect. It's just a total mystery to me. And if so, why and how? And the reason the question was triggered was because one of the slides that Mr. Anderson presented talked about people passing their driving test, which kind of, I wasn't sure how that slide related to the conversation today. So can we just, by 30 seconds, are the two systems needing to be connected, and are they going to be connected in some form or fashion?
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I'm going to start this, and then Tony's going to take it from there. But my understanding is at the end of the day, once we have full implementation, it will be one system. The screens will look the same, right? Because not all deputy registrars do both types of transactions, but that's okay. If they don't do driver's license functions or they don't do some other type of a function, they just would not have access, right, to those particular screens. But that's my understanding, is that it is one system once they are completely combined. With respect to information and data sharing, because they're one system, it will be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is, for instance, if you change your address on your driver's license, for instance, that would also then work to be a change of address for your title, something that does not happen today. Am I accurate?
Senator Senator Dibble, that answer your question?
Yes, if validated by Mr. Anderson.
If validated, he's got a check. We look at Ken. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes. Thanks. Close enough. Mm-hmm.
Right. The answer is yes.
And just, let me put a pin in the whole driver's license testing issue and the inadequacy and insufficiency of facilities. And my constituents who are waiting months and months to be able to go take their driving test. Been talking to the department about that. It's frustrating. I know we're on a path. It's a completely unrelated matter, but I just wanted to mention it here in this public space. It's very frustrating, and we need to address it.
Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn.
If I may, Mr. Chair, while it is a totally different issue, I do want to provide that there is currently right now an assessment being worked on to determine if there is a better way to handle scheduling for driver exams. We understand that that is a frustration. It is universally frustrating all across the state for anybody trying to schedule exams. And so the department is aware of that, committed to it, and currently engaging a third party to help us study that. In a different context, we'll be able to provide updates and information going forward on that.
And Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, that you are correct, that a different topic. I would tell you that the Senate Transportation Committee would be interested in hearing from you regarding your assessment on this particular issue. Senator Yasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as long as everyone's in the room, can we decide if it's Vitrus or Veters? Because I think we're all here, all the stakeholders are here. So can we decide what the name is before we end this first meeting of how we're going to term this until it gets changed? Thank
Senator,
you.
Senator Yasinski, it's Vitrus. Any further questions? Representative Torkelson.
Mr. Chair, when are we going to get a new name for this thing?
Any further questions? Okay. Representative Hornstein, looks like we are about ready to wrap up. Have you any final comments before we adjourn?
No additional questions, but a quick comment just to thank you, Mr. Chair, again for helping to get this meeting together. And I wanted to just return to some Mr. Tomes' opening comments, which I found to be very helpful, and I agree with them. He talked about us entering into a new relationship. He talked about the need for trust and transparency, and I do believe that with the signing of this contract and our hearing today, that it does constitute a new beginning in terms of how we are approaching driver and vehicle services in the state. And I do want to also echo what my colleagues have said in terms of their appreciation both for Mr. King's work and the work of the agencies and FAST in executing this contract and moving it forward. So I do look forward also to, you know, our next hearing, and I think we're going to have a lot more information about how this transition is going by then. And as Chair Newman indicated, if there is a need for us to meet again, perhaps in November, we will do that as a committee. But we will continue our oversight functions as per state law, and do appreciate everybody's involvement and participation. But this is a new beginning, and I think we are turning a page, and hopefully the problems that we've experienced over a decade now will be behind us. So we're looking forward to the results and hearing about progress. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. And to Minute and DPS, to the vendor, FAST, I just want to personally thank you for the work that you've been doing. We have, you know, we are coming out of a difficult period, but I will tell you that I personally am very optimistic, and I'm looking forward to the future where the state of Minnesota, I think, is going to have a system that will not only work, but we can be proud of. And so I just wanted to thank you and make sure you understand that we are appreciative. The legislature is appreciative of what you are doing. Members, thank you very much for coming. And if there are any concerns or requests subsequent to today and before the next scheduled meeting, please either contact Chairman Hornstein or myself. With that, we are adjourned.